And we are joined this morning by New York State Comptroller Thomas DiNapoli. Comptroller, good morning.
Good morning. It's great to be with you.
Let's start with something that's been in and out of the news, and that is the state's pension system. How is that working? How are the changes? How is everything in the state pension system working?
Well, the good news is we have one of the best funded public pension plans in the country. That's been a long history, and we're maintaining that. We value the fund on March 31st of every year. So this fiscal year, we had about 11.5% positive return. Keep in mind, our long-term investment goal is 5.9% return. So this past year was a very good year for us, so we're pleased about that. You know, that being said, the costs are increasing. Part of that has to do with the fact that people are living a lot longer, right? So we have to anticipate that retirees today very likely could be living well into their 80s, if not their 90s. So we have to factor that in when we calculate what we call the employer contribution rate. That's the money we charge to the employers, New York State, local governments, including Erie County, towns, villages, cities, school districts across the state. So kind of a combination of the demographics, and also, as you may have followed during the legislative session this year, there was what's called Tier 6 reform, enhancement of the benefit that newer employees, those who are in Tiers 5 and 6, that they would have an enhanced benefit package. This is a reform that many had been arguing for a long period of time, basically to deal with some of the issues of recruitment and retention that are out there. Probably a good move, but as you know, we indicated, because our office does a fiscal note on any proposals, also increased cost to the pension fund. So kind of the result of those factors, a couple of other pieces of it, we did have to have a slight increase in the contribution rate that we're charging our government employers for the payments that will be due in February 2026. So there's plenty of lead time for them to prepare. But what I always point out to everyone, my job as trustee of the fund is to keep it as closely funded to 100% as possible. We're now at about 93% funded, which for a public pension fund, anything in the 90s is a very, very good number. So for those of your listeners who are part of the pension system, they have nothing to worry about. We're in good shape. The employers will be paying a little more. That will have an impact on local budgets. But the reasons largely relate to demographics, increased salaries in recent years, and certainly the Tier 6 reforms as well.
So you talk about the increased costs, increased salaries. What does this look like 10 or 20 years down the road? Is the pension system stable for the long-term future?
Well, it's been around for about 100 years, so we think it'll be around at least for another 100. Yeah, I mean, the short answer to that is I would use the word sustainable. I think that's probably a better way to describe it. Again, because we have a long history. It predates my tenure as controller, whether it's Republicans or Democrats. Remember, Ned Regan from Erie County was controller a number of years ago. Whoever has been in this position, Republicans or Democrats, have always protected the interest of the pension fund so that we haven't made some of the poor choices that have been made in other states where their pensions are poorly funded. Sometimes very easy to say, we're not going to fully fund our pensions because, you know what, over time, investments will take care of it. Well, all well and good, but then when you come up to a year like the Great Recession, or we had, you know, obviously a negative year when COVID was at its worst, it's very hard to make up when you're already poorly funded. Well, we've always been strongly funded, so even when we have a downturn, we're able to bounce back very rapidly. That's why we're over 93% funded now. So I would say the short answer to that is absolutely the pensions are sustainable. And keep in mind, we are trying to do more to invest money within New York State. So we're not only making money for the pension fund, but helping to grow the economies across New York. We have a couple of programs that are specifically targeted on investment strategies based in New York.
Earlier this week, you released the state education audit. Lots of questions around education. Obviously, there was proposed cuts in certain districts in the governor's original budget. What did we learn in the audit released earlier this week?
Well, we had a couple things going on as far as education. First of all, you're absolutely right. The governor's budget proposed a number of changes as far as the school aid formula, and that became very controversial, right? When I was in the legislature, one of the biggest issues always was, before you could close down a budget, was school aid. How much would each district get? And generally speaking, districts have increased their state aid pretty significantly because New Yorkers are very supportive of education. What the governor did is took some of her more controversial proposals to change the school aid formula, took them off the table, and now the Rockefeller Center Institute is going to be coming out with a report to make recommendations on how to change or reform the school aid formula. I think that report, hopefully will be out by the end of this year, which is not too far away at this point, will really be the context for the budget negotiations that will be coming up very shortly. We'll have to see what that report says. Separate from that, audits out on a slew of school districts across the state. So that is part of our regular audit responsibility. What you may be referring to, though, is we put out a report this week on higher education in New York. And what that found is that in ways that sometimes New Yorkers perhaps don't fully appreciate, the higher education sector is an important driver of our economy in terms of jobs, in terms of money that's spent, and therefore revenue that's generated. So we put that out to really highlight the fact that the 290 degree-granting post-secondary institutions in our state employ over 296, almost 300,000 people, and wages paid out approximately $26.5 billion. So obviously, when we think about higher ed, colleges and universities, we think about the benefit that it gives to the students, makes them better able to compete in the job market, in the marketplace. But we also need to factor in the fact that these are big drivers of our economy, especially local economies. What's the concern of late? And you've seen it in Western New York as well as other parts of the state. Some of our smaller independent colleges have closed over the past couple of years, and we lost about four or five of them. Most recently, in the Capital District, College of St. Rose. This has a negative impact on local economies. So it's a reminder that the higher ed sector struggles. The SUNY campuses, we haven't had any issue of closure there. However, we know on some of the SUNY campuses there have been some significant cutbacks in programs. It's for a combination of reasons, enrollment has been declining on most campuses, expenses are going up. But we put that report out early this week because we really wanted to have folks focus on the fact that higher education is a very important part of the economic mix in our state, and we don't want to lose that higher education infrastructure. That investment is a very important one.
Yeah, my alma mater right here in the city of Buffalo, Medei College, closed a little over a year ago. Yes. Always sad to drive by, but happy that one of the charter schools have taken over the campus. But,
yeah, Casanova, also was another one. And as I mentioned, College of St. Rose. So it's been a tough time for some of those smaller colleges. And they've been, as you could personally attest, they've been an important part of the community fabric.
Yeah, if it wasn't for them, I wouldn't be here. But
there
then
you
again,
go.
But then again, some of the listeners might be upset about that.
No.
Speaking of schools, public schools, K through 12, we hear a lot over the last probably 2 years about the budget crunch and the, quote, fiscal cliff that some of the districts are feeling. Is that, are those budget crunches necessary? Staff layoffs, are those necessary? And if so, is that something we can see ending in the near future?
Well, it varies from district to district, right? So, we have, 700-800 school districts across the state. The fiscal cliff often refers to the federal money that came in during the pandemic, a great deal of it targeted to our schools and education. And what we warned about is that, the obvious, that money wasn't going to be there forever, and especially as COVID has, it's not gone away, but obviously it's much improved from a public health perspective than it was a couple of years ago. And we really warned our schools not to count on that money being forever. Do not start new programs with temporary federal money. It really was the same advice we gave to our municipalities as well. But you do have some districts where they perhaps didn't plan as appropriately as they should have. They may be facing a cliff because some of the new initiatives they may have spent money on became very popular. The challenge, too, is that although the state has been increasing school aid, depending on your particular district and how the formula plays out, some of our local districts may feel that the state aid formula is not keeping up with the reality of their expenses. That's one reason why the legislature and the governor have, you know, the Rockefeller Center looking at the formula to see if there might be a way to be smarter about how we distribute school aid. So, you know, I mean, to the point of your question, it really varies from district to district. My guess is there are some districts that are really feeling the expense level, especially those districts that perhaps have had an unexpected increase in enrollment. It may not have been fully anticipated or planned for. And certainly the schools, as with all of us, have been hit by inflation, rising costs, you know, fuel and some of that, some of those costs are moderating. Insurance costs generally have been going up in many of our districts. I'm not saying this is a bad thing, but the reality is contracts, negotiations have increased salaries significantly in many cases. So there are many factors that go into the equation. The last point I'd make, though, when we've done a number of our audits, we found that some of our school districts have actually been keeping a fund balance beyond what is really allowed statutorily under New York state law. So again, it varies from district to district, but some of the districts actually have built up a cushion, if I could use that phrase, that they'll be able to use if they are headed to a tougher economic time. And a lot of this will really depend on the next budget cycle. Will school aid go up once again? If so, how much? What will be the distribution among our school districts? But, you know, that's why it's important for your listeners, wherever they live, pay attention to what's happening in your local school. Go to the school board meetings when you can. Go to the budget hearings. That's where you're gonna be able to really figure out what's happening in your own community and what could be the impact on your local property tax base.
Speaking of tax, in the month of August, you reported that local sales tax were up 3.8%. Is this a steady rise that we are seeing in New York State?
It's actually a stronger rise in August than we saw certainly in July, and even when you look at the numbers for the first half of the year. What we've really been seeing is that we're kind of reverting back to pre-pandemic growth levels. So that's a good news that there's still growth in sales tax revenue. We chart sales tax revenue on a monthly basis because it's the second biggest revenue source to the state after personal income tax. But for our local governments, our counties particularly, it is in many cases the biggest revenue source. And most of our counties share some of that sales tax collection with municipalities within their jurisdiction. And some cities have their own sales tax that they levy. So sales tax is very important to look at the trends. The trends for now are showing continued modest growth. We've seen a resurgence in New York City collections, but actually outside of the city now, most counties are seeing positive growth on sales tax as well.
Another report, Comptroller, to move away from money for a second. And this is a story that obviously we've been hearing, unfortunately, a lot about in Western New York, and that is the rise in motor vehicle fatalities. Is there a single cause leading to that? Sad news that we've been reporting.
The numbers are really troubling. Because you would think that when you look at the overall statistics, you know, and all the emphasis on safety that's out there, that the numbers should be going in an opposite direction. But we found that we looked at the period 2019 to 2022, and motor vehicle fatalities rose almost 26%. And the highest level was in the year 2022. And that was a time when the number of vehicle miles that were traveled and the number of licensed drivers and the number of accidents actually declined. So it's almost like a disconnect. You would think that because of that, there'd be fewer fatalities. But what we're seeing is that that although the accident numbers are declining, the fatalities are increasing. I wish I could identify an easy answer as to the why, but it certainly underscores the need for us to emphasize how key it is that motor vehicle safety be really drilled down, especially to our newer, younger drivers. Obviously, a part of it is continued enforcement, you know, for those who, God forbid, were driving while impaired. But, you know, our report really looked at the numbers, not necessarily at, you know, coming up with what the causes were, but certainly an alarm that we saw those numbers going up.
Was there a month or time of year where we saw more fatal accidents?
I don't think we broke it down by month, but definitely, you know, when we looked at that period, it was troubling that the latest year that we looked at had the highest numbers. So that's certainly suggesting a trend in the wrong direction. You know, as time goes on, we'll update, you know, those numbers and see, you know, whether the trend starts to reverse itself. But, you know, again, I can't give you a worse month as a breakdown.
Another trend that obviously we don't like to see is hate crimes surging in New York. This is a report that you filed last month, up 69% since 2019.
Another troubling trend. And you know, since the year 2000, when it was first required that hate crimes be statistics be maintained and that hate crimes be reported, we actually now have the highest level of hate crimes being reported. So again, this is an area where the trends definitely are going in the wrong direction. Does some of this relate to some of the fallout from COVID? You know, perhaps if you look at the numbers during that time frame, you saw a huge spike in anti-Asian hate crimes. Now, since COVID has somewhat abated, we've seen those numbers go down, but we still have more anti-Asian hate crimes than we did before the pandemic. What you're also seeing is the biggest percentage of hate crimes are targeted people based on religion. And within those numbers, Jewish victims are the ones that are most targeted. Could that have something to do with the geopolitical situation happening in the Middle East? Very possibly, but certainly still very, very troubling. In terms of racial hate crimes, black New Yorkers suffer the most. In terms of LGBTQ, gay men suffer the most in terms of hate crimes. So the other trend that I want to point out, up until recent years, most hate crimes were targeted against property. You know, vandalism, graffiti, you know, that kind of thing. What we're now seeing is that more of the hate crimes are actually targeting individuals, assaults. So it's troubling that the numbers are going up. It's troubling that the types of hate crimes are now really targeting individuals more so even than property. And keep in mind, we're looking at statistics based on hate crimes reported, right? We look at Division of Criminal Justice Services data. We look at New York City Police Department data. So I underline the word reported, because I think it's fair to say many of these incidents are never reported. Sometimes people are ashamed. They don't want to come forward. They're afraid of being re-victimized, or they feel it'll just go away if they don't say anything. So I would say these numbers, as troubling as they are, they probably understate what the reality of the problem is. So what it really underscores is the need for leadership at every levels, whether it's political, religious, our schools as well. We've got to get back to more discussion about appreciating differences. New York is a very diverse state, becoming more diverse. We all have to live together, but we have to do more really to share thoughts, to bridge divides, and to really not just talk the talk on tolerance, but people have got to step up and you know, really engage communities in this discussion. This is not a trend we want to see continue.
New York State Comptroller Thomas DiNapoli, before we let you go, anything that you want the listeners to be keeping an eye out for coming from your office in the next few weeks or months?
Well, you know, we are doing more reports on education, particularly as one area. We know everybody's concerned about that because, you know, during COVID, we had some issues of learning loss and continued concerns about absenteeism rates. So keep an eye on that. But the most fun thing I always tell people to keep us in mind for is returning lost money, all bank accounts, checks that weren't cash. So our Office of Unclaimed Funds, you could search online. your listeners can just go to our website, whatever your search engine is, put in New York State Comptroller. You can search online. If it's an easy match, you can get your money back in a matter of days. If you have a question, we have an 800 number that's staffed during regular business hours, 1-800-221-9311. We have unclaimed fund accounts valued at about $19 billion. So we have a lot of money we want to return to New Yorkers. We're returning about $1.5 million a day, but there's more to be returned. So I hope if your listeners remember nothing else from our conversation, that they check out unclaimed funds on the Comptroller's website.
He is Thomas DiNapoli, the Comptroller of New York State. And Comptroller, I appreciate you joining us. Hopefully we can talk again in the near future. And hopefully when this airs, the New York Mets have clinched a place in the playoffs.
I'm with you on that one. And we're hoping the Buffalo Bills have a championship season this year.
Well, hey, probably a better chance of the latter, but if both could go on, it would be the greatest sports season in my lifetime. So
I love it.
I really appreciate you joining us, and again, hope to talk to you again really soon.
Great, thanks.